Michael Savage.
Either they're crazy, super crazy, or totally insane. Most people who are legitimate and sane don't go into politics.
On Hot Talk 560 KSFO. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
We're going to talk about drugs today is what we're going to do in the Savage Nation, because the president has opened up the Pandora's box by saying marijuana is no more dangerous than alcohol. What he's done is set common sense on its head. Obviously, he never took science on his road to his law degree, and he doesn't know the difference between a water-soluble drug such as alcohol and a fat-soluble drug such as marijuana, which stays in your system for days, if not weeks at a time. But that's not the issue. I expect Obama knows about as much about the difference between water-soluble and fat-soluble as he does about health care. The issue, though, is not about Obama. The issue is about what message it sends to our vulnerable children, the most vulnerable members of our society. When a man in such a position of power tells them it's okay to smoke marijuana, wink, wink, we all know it isn't. In fact, experts will tell you today how dangerous it is. But I'm not going to talk about marijuana per se. That's only part and parcel of the meltdown of our society under this liberal juggernaut that is ruling the world. I woke up this morning and I saw a very sad story about a track star, age 19, at University of Pennsylvania, who jumped off a building. The girl was beautiful. She was talented. She was physically fit. Track star from New Jersey. Jumps from a Philly parking garage because of the stress of her grades at her Ivy League school, her father told the New York Post. She went to college, she was happy. Then there's more pressure on her than ever before, right? And so she gets under a lot of pressure trying to, you know, get straight A's. So she shares her suicidal thoughts with her parents, and guess what happens? They send her to a drug pusher called a therapist. The drug pusher therapist puts her on antidepressants, and guess what happens next? She jumps off a building. I am going to tell you right now that drugs, the prescription drugs, are about as dangerous as they come. Antidepressants, psychiatric meds, as the New American said years ago, is a prescription for murder. I've been writing about the dangers of these drugs in books since 1982 when I wrote Healing Children Naturally. I've been warning you against putting your children on these hazardous drugs. I'm warning you about the medical profession, Zoloft, Adderall, Pramate, Elavil. They're killing your children. If your child is particularly intelligent, he or she is at greater risk than the average child because they're taking the brightest amongst our children and doping them up to make them conform, and they're letting the dumbest amongst our children lead the classes. Now, is it a conspiracy? No. What it is pure greed. It's all about money. What they've done here is found a method of permitting parents who are lazy to put their children on disability payments. That's right. You heard me. You don't understand what's going on here, but I do. Did you know that children who are declared to be disabled get a certain amount of money from Social Security that's more than your grandfather who fought in the Korean War does? Mental illness is now the leading cause of disability in children, well ahead of physical disabilities such as cerebral palsy or Down syndrome, for which these federal programs were created. And as a result of this, the pharmaceutical establishment, in cahoots with the shrinks, are saying with almost a rubber stamp, yeah, your child's disabled, put him on this, put him on that, and we're having these heroic suicides and heroic homicides as a result. That's one of the main topics that I want to talk about today on the Savage Nation. And in order to engage you in this topic and bring you into the discussion, I would like to invite you to call with your antidepressant horror stories. Have you or someone in your family or close circle been affected negatively by antidepressants? You see, they're not all they're cracked up to be. Let me explain to you in a nutshell what most of the antidepressants are. The most popular type, the Prozac type, is called an SSRI, a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. What does that mean? It means serotonin makes us feel good. It's a mood stabilizing chemical that our body naturally produces as a result of a certain right amount of sleep, the right foods, the right exercise. We'll have a certain amount of serotonin in our serum at any time. Well, the thought was is that if that's a mood stabilizer, more of it would be better. And so the shrinks worked in cahoots with the drug establishment to find a way to keep as much of the serotonin circulating in our serum at all times as possible. It made sense. I mean, it wasn't they set out to hurt anybody. Figured people are depressed. What's the best way to keep them their mood elevated, make sure that the serotonin levels are kept up. So we'll develop a drug that constantly prevents the body from depleting serotonin. Well, guess what? There's no such thing as a free lunch. And there's no such thing as an endless supply of serotonin. And if you keep artificially squeezing on that serotonin pump, eventually the pump runs dry. The person goes into a black hole. The person climbs a roof and throws themselves off it. Or the person picks up a gun like Adam Lanza and goes and wastes a bunch of children. It's not the gun, stupid. It's the psychiatric drugs. And that's what I want to talk about. My dog just looked up. He got excited. Old Teddy's back in the studio. He had his grooming yesterday. I wouldn't put my dog on such a medication, and yet many of you do. Many of you have been so brainwashed by the medical establishment that you even put your dog or cat on Prozac or Prozac-like compounds because they acted too much like a dog or a cat. Don't you understand that this is all social control? You don't get it. You will get it. The phone number is 855-400-7282. It's the Savage Nation. We're talking today primarily about the grave dangers that Obama put our youngsters in by telling them marijuana is no more dangerous than alcohol. And I'm not arguing you should become an alcoholic, nor am I arguing you should even drink a beer. I'm just telling you that marijuana is far more deadly than alcohol, by the way. And then I want to talk about your marijuana, leave out marijuana, I'm sorry, your antidepressant horror stories. Either your own, did you get them prescribed, and what did it do to you? Or do you know someone in your family who was put on any of these wackadoodle drugs, and what it did to them? Again, the phone number is 855-400-7282. I want to go back for a moment to radio per se, because I have begun in the new slot. It's only been 20 days now, 19 or 20 days of the month. I've only been on the air 2 or 3 weeks in this daytime slot after 20 years in radio. And I want to read you some of the article comments that we've gotten so far, and then I want you to call me on this issue. Do you like my new show? Do you still think I'm better than the wall banger who competes with me? Now, the wall banger put himself out. I know he's going to regret what he said, but wall banger said he's going to leave New York over Governor Cuomo slamming pro-lifers. He will not leave New York. I will bet you any amount of money that he's lying about that, as he lies about some other things, including charitable events. So I want to read you some of the things people are saying thus far about Michael Savage and about the others. I like Savage because he's a conservative and puts Democrats and Republicans on the carpet, someone wrote. He is not a party hack. Plus, as an old reform lib, he knows how to get in their face and dish back to them what they dish out. Republicans just don't know how to fight. Savage does. I also love that Savage has more than just politics to discuss, which makes his show more entertaining and seldom boring. I love Savage in the new slot. I think that H is a nice guy, and I like him on TV with guests, but his radio show is so dull and a broken record. And when the GOP is in power, Wallbanger becomes a Republican hack, as he was during the Bush years. He only becomes a conservative when Dems have the White House. I can only listen to the Wallbanger when he has guests on, as he does on his TV show. Funny how when I see him on TV with guests, his voice does not bother me. But on the radio, Wallbanger's voice is irritating, and I cannot listen to him for long. Next comment is this. The three best conservative talk radio hosts by far are the three that we know. But I have to give Savage credit for writing off the Republicans years before Limbaugh and others realized the GOP is a wolf in sheep's clothing. He doesn't mention others. And Savage at 3 p.m. Eastern has caught fire. It will be the biggest thing in radio. Others have said, I wish he was still on at night because he was the last word in talk radio and he's addictive. If you hit a comment on any of those topics, the phone number is 855-107-282. If you can hear the background sound, the tea is brewing in the radio kitchen, and yet we can hear it because I leave the door open to make sure I know when the water's boiling so it doesn't boil over and ruin anything. Again, the topics are drugs and radio. 855-400-7282. Let's start with a quick call. Ferris on WABC, go ahead, please.
Good day, doctor. This woman who jumped from the building for the University of Pennsylvania says less about drugs than it says about our society. In other words, the marijuana that Obama's talking about, how insane and how stupid is the culture to believe this president, and I use that...
Wait, hold on. You're going off the track. You're talking about the girl who was not on marijuana. She was on an antidepressant.
Yes. You know, she has the same vapid existence that all of the other young people...
Well, no, she's dead. You don't know what existence she had. That's not right of you to say that. The girl was a track star. She was an academic star. She goes to the University of Pennsylvania. She gets into pressure. She tells her father. They send her to a shrink. The shrink puts her on antidepressants. A few days or a few weeks later, she jumps off a building.
Sure, but how did she get that way? She went to the government public schools. That is a GPS. She attended the...
All right, now thanks for the call. All right, Ferris is barred from the show for a few days and weeks. First of all, he's a regular. Let me tell you, regulars are bad for radio. Then you start to sound like Wallbanger or one of the others. You don't have regulars on unless they call you a great American. And I'm not a great American. You're not a great American. Unless you're 6 feet under in a military cemetery, you're not a great American. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. The Savage Nation is presented by Swiss America at 800-BUY-COIN, the only gold company Michael Savage trusts.
The list includes 15-year-old Kip Kinkle withdrawing from Prozac when he shot 22 classmates, killing two, after murdering his mother and stepfather at his home in Springfield, Oregon. 14-year-old Elizabeth Bush on Prozac when she blasted away at fellow students in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, wounding one. 18-year-old Jason Hoffman on Effexor and Celexa when he opened fire at his California high school, wounding five. 15-year-old Sean Cooper on a mix of antidepressants when he shot students in Idaho. 15-year-old T.J. Solomon, also on a mix of antidepressants, when he aimed his shotgun at classmates in Conyers, Georgia, wounding six. And 17-year-old Eric Harris, on Luvox, when he and partner Dylan Klebold killed 12 classmates and a teacher in the bloodiest school massacre yet, Columbine.
Well, that was then, this is now, and it's gotten worse, and drugs are involved in every school shooting that I've been able to investigate, and I don't think that enough of us in the media are doing our jobs with regard to warning America about these prescriptions for murder that are being put out by the drug peddlers with psychiatric credentials. The fact of the matter is they can be very helpful in some cases and extremely dangerous in others, but they don't come with sufficient warning labels. But there's an element to it that needs to be discussed, and that is, why are the prescriptions for these drugs on a rise? Answer. Because of the racket called disability. Because disability in children puts the income from SSI up through the roof. As a result, a bunch of corrupt parents in the hundreds of thousands say that their child has mental problems, can't pay attention, can't do this, go to the shrink. Shrink says, yeah, mentally ill. Put him on the drug. The child then gets a check for the fat mommy so she can go and gamble away at an Indian gambling casino, I would imagine. And meanwhile, you have a roving murderer there sitting there with drugs in his system that can go off at any moment. So it's not about the guns, it's about the drugs, and it's time we talked about the dangers of prescription antidepressants. I've asked you to call with your prescription heart, and I want to tell you something. This topic is something I've been involved in publishing since 1982 when I wrote Healing Children Naturally. I started that book in the, maybe I have a peanut allergy and I'll die on the air. I don't really know. But meanwhile, my voice is going. I did it again. I'm eating mixed nuts, low salt, no salt. And I keep forgetting that I shouldn't do it while I'm on the air. Actually, my voice sounds interesting. I find it very sexy. The feedback's very good. So maybe I should keep eating nuts. Rich on WJR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks, sir. Actually, I'm quite excited. I got through on the first attempt, and I'm very honored to have a chance to speak with you.
Okay, go ahead. Fire away.
Well, what I was calling for is not regarding to the drugs, about your time change and becoming available in your earlier time slot. Prior to this time change a few weeks back, I've always listened to WJR and I've always listened to Mr. Limbaugh in the afternoon, but I was not familiar with your name or who you were. But now I find myself going out of my way every day at 3 o'clock to be in the car, because I'm a salesman, to be in the car.
That's good. Rich, let me tell you, first of all, I had you up on the air because you called, and I figured, okay, we're talking about drugs and about new listeners. I'm honored to be on WJR and all the other new stations in this primetime slot that they kicked Hannity off. They kicked them off 52 of the best stations in the country, no matter what he says. He can't spin that. And they did so because I had a reputation that preceded me, and they figured that you'd like me, and I'm glad that you do. Let me send you a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny, which will go out to you today. Now let's go to the callers on the suicidal, homicidal thoughts and urges that they themselves or others have had. WABC, Richard, you're next up. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, you're 100%, because I was diagnosed as bipolar schizophrenic, and the psychiatrist in Philadelphia, they gave me Seroquel 300 milligrams three times a day. That was 900 milligrams. You made the thought that you just want to commit suicide. You wanted to get out of your body so much. And
Wait, hold on. So they put you on Seroquel. What happened? Did you get off it?
Oh, I went cold turkey because, like I said, they kept saying, no, you need more because of the thoughts and everything. But the thoughts were getting terrible. I wanted to commit suicide.
So wait, so the thoughts got worse under the antidepressant?
Oh, yes, Michael. God is my witness. I got off. I went cold turkey, and I started. You see, I'm a Catholic. I practice a Catholic. I started doing my rosaries every time I got into those moves. Instead of taking the pills, I would do the rosaries.
Bingo. Thank you very much. There are other mechanical techniques, and they could be as simple as a rosary, a prayer, a run, a walk, a push-up, a chin-up. There are many things you can do other than popping an antidepressant, Richard, which is how humanity survived for millennia.
I agree with you, Michael, and I thank God for the rosaries and everything else. And then slowly those thoughts were going away and everything else.
And by the way, did you learn to tell the thoughts to go to you-know-where? Get out of your head, just chase them away, don't take them seriously?
Kept saying, I rebuke you. People.
That's right. Did anyone tell you to tell the thoughts to go to hell, to tell the voices they're not you, you're not interested in them? Go find someone else? Because you have the power to do that. All right, my friend, thank you very much for the confessional here on the Savage Nation. Michael Savage will be right back. Be here or be absolutely nowhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
One of the things that in the past we have known about depression is that it very, very rarely leads to violence. It's only been since the advent of these new SSRI drugs that we have murderers, sometimes even mass murderers, taking antidepressant drugs.
That's the famous and great psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Bregan, who I had on the radio show before anyone else did, and I'm glad he's gotten wide this, let's say wide play, not wide enough for me. He has been on this subject for a very long time. Dr. Bregan will join us on this program in about 1 hour, in the next hour, if you have questions for him. He'll do everything except give you analysis. He'll talk about the dangers of prescription drugs with regard to the mind and the nervous system, especially our poor children. And so we're going back again to drugs on the firing line, because doctors are prescribing these medicines for far more than depression. They're prescribing them for OCD, bipolar disorder, bulimia, panic disorder, social anxiety disorder, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. They're using Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta, being prescribed to treat ADHD. These are dangerous because the side effects may include suicide and homicidal ideation. Now, I want to back up for a minute because I want to tell you something on the show that I don't think I've ever really gone into, because I'm not a complainer or am I looking for your sympathy, but it's important that you understand something about me. I have been a highly creative person since I'm a little boy, highly creative. Always agitated, always talkative, wouldn't sit in his seat, wouldn't listen to the teacher's instructions. I wasn't destructive. I was just too bright for the classroom. Well, they didn't know that, and I didn't know it. So I was punished a lot. I was too funny. They put me in the back of the classroom. I had no idea what was wrong with me. I just thought I was a funny kid and I had a sense of humor. But it goes back before that. What makes a child act funny? What makes a child act out in any way? And is there something wrong with a kid being funny, being the class clown, if that's what I was? Since there was no other role for me at the time, I became the class clown. So anyway, you go back and you ask yourself, what makes a person become what they are? What makes Sammy run, so to speak? Well, nature, nurture, genes, family, mother, father, brothers, sisters. We know all of that. Commonsensical today, right? Well, we didn't know all of that then. You just live through it and you become what you become. Well, all of my teenage years, I was fighting depression, and I didn't know it. I didn't even know what depression was. Why was I fighting depression? Well, for one, teenagers are very emotional. I was more emotional than most of my friends. And there was a lot of tragedy in my immediate family, which I'm not going to talk about. You can see pictures of my poor brother Jerome in train tracks. That had a deep effect upon me, having a brother in a wheelchair who didn't talk and couldn't speak and was sent away to a home at age six. And basically, I felt I was blamed for him being sent away to a home. I didn't know I felt blamed, nor did I know I picked up a guilt attack because of it. But why? How did that happen? It's very important you hear this. Because although I've been on the air for 19 and a half, almost 20 years, many of you haven't put the pieces together. I'm doing it now because I'm not going to be on the air for the rest of your life. Let me put it to you that way. The arc is coming to the end. And I don't mean I've gone to the mountain and seen the other side for tomorrow. But the arc is coming to the end, whether it's years or, you know, whatever it may be. That's the point. The end of a career, I feel like opening up and telling you some of these things. When my brother, who was born brain damaged and couldn't walk and was put into a wheelchair, he was blonde, blue-eyed baby, beautiful boy, didn't know anything was wrong with him until he was one. I didn't know how old one. Then he didn't walk right. They didn't say, put him in a wheelchair. They said there was something wrong with him. Don't talk to him. All I was told by the doctors was, don't talk to your brother. He doesn't understand you. You'll hurt him. What do you mean I'll hurt him? So when my parents weren't looking, I'd sneak into the kitchen where he's sitting in a high chair, and I would talk to my brother, even though he was said to be deaf and blind. Now, I don't know if he heard me, but I do know he heard me. How? Because I would whistle certain tunes to him, and he would smile. And that made me understand he could hear. They didn't know it. I knew more than they did. And they'd say, where are you? Where are you, Michael? What are you doing? Go away from him. You'll hurt him. Okay, so that was guilt number one. Now, I knew my little brother was alive inside of that broken body. They didn't know it. I knew it. I look around the San Francisco Bay Area, and there's a lot of things I love here. And one of the things I love here is the way they care for the truly disabled. And one of the things I hate about the Bay Area are the fakers with blue disability cards who are not disabled. I'd like to cripple them myself for abusing a system that was put in place to take care of the really sick. I hate people who have, ooh, my back, and they park in the spot. I'd like to take, you know what, and give it to them right in the leg to make sure they really don't walk properly. But I don't do it. I control myself. Why? Because I have sympathy for the really disabled. Now, today, my brother might have been kept alive, and he probably would have been put in a wheelchair, and he might have been able to have a motorized device which enabled him to control the motions of the chair, etc. I see these poor people around, and they have a life, somewhat of a life. They weren't sent into a snake pit like my brother was at age six. Now, let me tell you the rest of the story, and I'll bring it right up to radio today. If you want to hear it, fine. If you want to turn it off, you can do that. I just got to tell the rest of the story and get it over with. So, I don't know, I was six, seven, he was five. It was decided by the great doctor that would be, listen to this, it's better for the healthy children that we send Jerome away to a home. You listening to this story? It's better for the healthy children that we send them away to a home. I didn't know what that meant. I'm not going to even tell you the story of the day that he was sent away because I'll break down on the show and I can't do it. Nevertheless, he was sent away to a home. And the neighborhood was a close-knit immigrant neighborhood. A lot of people went to pieces in the street, including some very close people to me. But I didn't know what was going on. What do I know? I'm 7 years old. All I know is that they imposed this guilt upon me and my healthy sister by saying, we sent your brother away for you because it's better for him because the great effing doctor said so. So now what does that do to a 7 or 6 year old boy? He walks around and says, my poor brother is locked in a hospital somewhere. He's not with his brother and his sister and his mother and his father. Because of me, they sent him away to a terrible place. Now you understand where guilt comes from. It doesn't come out of the air. It comes from mistakes people make. So that sets me off on my life path to find the cure for sicknesses, to protect those who have no way to protect themselves, to make a mother laugh who was in serious depression afterwards and would cry to me, a little boy, day and night, about what happened to her son, and I would make her laugh by becoming a little clown. And so I learned how to entertain. I learned how to laugh. I learned how to make others laugh. I learned, more importantly, from my brother first, how to talk to animals, how to talk to those who don't talk, how to talk to those who can't speak. In other words, I learned how to communicate with audiences that aren't even there. Do you realize that when you're talking into a microphone, as I am doing with you right now, I'm reaching God knows how many people in over 200 stations across America. Some of you in a snowstorm, some of you in a sunstorm, some of you in jail, some of you in bed, some of you in a car. But I'm reaching you, and I'm talking with you, and you can feel me through that speaker. How do I do it? Where did it come from? Did I learn it in the School of Broadcasting? No, I didn't learn it in the School of Broadcasting. I learned it by talking to my silent brother. Now I have to take a quick break, recollect myself, and go back to regular thoughts right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Little Horace Silva, song for my father, trying to segue out of that rivulet I got myself into. The reason I told you that story in the midst of talking about psychiatric drugs as prescriptions for murder and the high numbers of suicides and homicides related to these drugs is because I've been dealing with guilt and depression my entire life, and I wanted you to understand where I think it came from. I'm not, see, in a way, maybe I'm blaming him. I'm not. Maybe I'm blaming the doctor. I'm trying not to. He didn't do it to hurt me. He thought he was helping me. And I'm just trying to tell you that as a kid, you struggle your way through things, and you try to cope in any way you can. I'm lucky that I grew up in the pre-drug era. I mean, I try to self-medicate with marijuana, with alcohol. I was a pot smoker. I've told you that. I've been a drinker ever since I'm 18 years old, but I control it. It's one or two drinks at night, sometimes none, rarely ever more. I've been drunk two or three times in my life. I hate it. I hate the feeling of a loss of control, because if there's one thing I like is to be in control of myself, which is why I don't use marijuana. It's the most dangerous of all drugs in my experience. And I've been dealing with guilt and depression, self-medication, my whole life. But from this area, where did I go? You know, the Chinese have a phrase of crisis, as you well know, if you remember some of the self-healing books of 20, 30 years ago. There is no word in the Chinese language for crisis. There are two words called difficult opportunity, opportune difficulty. And I use those words to take me out of positions I couldn't find myself out of. No one could help me. I was in places I couldn't come out of. I was in the dark wood many a time. And then when I stumbled upon some wisdom, word wisdom, such as crisis equals difficult opportunity, I dug my way out. I found my way out. I compassed my way out. Whatever you want to say. Now, think about what I've done with my life. I've spent years in Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, the Marquesas, over the earlier years of my life, looking for folk cures. What would drive a kid from New York, whose peers went to law school, medical school, dental school, business school, this school, that school, what would I be doing 9,000 miles from home in the middle of rainforest in the late 60s and 70s into the early 80s, sitting in dark villages at night on straw mats, drinking kava kava and learning folk medicines and bringing them back to the National Cancer Institute and other places? I was looking for cures. For what reason? Maybe to cure my brother. Maybe to help my mother. I don't know. Maybe to help myself. But what motivates a person is interesting, but what they do with it is even more interesting. Meaning you can become a complainer and a whiner and this and that, society did it to me, and give up and just become a drug addict and throw your life away. Or you can struggle with it. That's the point I'm making. What is the whole point of living, but it's about struggle, and how the struggle can be turned into something good? I think of the chicken. My father would watch nature movies with me when I was a little kid, and he always would marvel, as the projector was running in those days, well, yes, we had 8mm projectors, about the chicken coming out of the egg. And he would say to me, watch the chicken struggling to come out of the egg. And it was a pathetic scene. I didn't understand why no one reached over and helped that little chicklet come out of the egg. And I said, Dad, why doesn't someone help that chicken come out of the egg? And he would say, if anyone reaches over and helps the chicklet come out of the egg, the chicklet will die. I said, why? He said, because the chicklet won't become strong enough to support, to defend itself and feed itself and take care of itself from other birds. You understand what my father was trying to teach me? It's what I'm trying to teach you. The wisdom of the fathers. Do you understand how lost we have become in this society where every weakling is told that they should be weaker? Every weakling is told they should be drugged. Every weakling is told they're a hero. Every weakling is held up as a role model. They cry on your shoulders. They go into rehab. Every actor who pretends they're a Navy SEAL, the next day you hear a story. They were really a drug addict and a cross-dresser, and they're glad now because they went into treatment and they feel better. Nothing is real, my friends. The only thing that's real is reality itself. And so we have so little time to do all of this. I meant to talk about antidepressants and what they could do to you, and somehow I stumbled into my own story, because what motivates me is the fear that so many of you are being misled, knowingly or unknowingly, by well-meaning and by bad-meaning people, into the world of drugs, marijuana, etc. And they don't even know what they're doing, some of them. Some of them do know what they're doing. They're doing it just to drive up profits in the drug world or to control you. And I warn you to struggle with your problems. I warn you that your problem, God doesn't give you any problem you can't struggle with on your own. I will tell you that that's a biblical teaching, or it's a New Age preaching. I don't know which. But they work. God never gives us any problem that we can't deal with, ever. And you can deal with it. Watch out for the drug excuse, the crutch. That crutch is very, very dangerous. And so you live in a society where they tell you, go ahead, reach for the crutch, take the crutch, whatever. But you know where it leads, and that's what I'm saying to you. So where do you think this girl comes back, this beautiful girl? I pick up the paper this morning. I see the 19-year-old girl jumps off a building at the University of Pennsylvania. And I sit there just saying, how in the world? She's 19. She's a track star, so that rules out illicit drugs. You see, most athletes, as you well know, don't use drugs. Never mind the people in the NFL. They're in a class by themselves. I wouldn't use them as role models. But most healthy people don't use drugs. Healthy people who go into sports especially don't use drugs. So she's a healthy kid. She's a student, goes to UP, finds the stress great, goes to the father. The father sends her to a doctor. Doctor sends her to a pharmacy. She gets the prescription drugs, and bingo, off the roof. So I said, I have to talk about depression medications, the dangers thereof, and I think that you should call me on these subjects, by the way. 855-407-282. And the reason I'm talking about it is manifest in the statements that Obama made the other day. How we have gone from a president who would lead children in a positive manner to an almost like a hipster. Yeah, pot's not as any worse than alcohol. Do you have any idea who said that? It's not your corner. It's not a guy on the corner. The president of the United States. Millions of vulnerable children are going to say, hey, the president said it's cool. Let me smoke some weed. Does he not understand the dangers in what he said? Or does he not give a darn? I think it's both. And that's the danger here. If he can dismiss a subject as serious as drug use and set back the war on drugs, or let us say even the resistance to using drugs, 30 years with one remark, what else has he set back 30 years? You want me to name them for you? I won't bother. So before we take our break in this hour, coming to the next hour, we have Dr. Breggin on, Peter Breggin, the psychiatrist who's been on this path of anti-psychiatric drugs for so many decades. He's going to answer your questions. And let me end this hour by telling you the most astonishing story. An ex-DEA agent has left the DEA and taken a job with a pot firm. Did you hear what I just said to you? Do you want to see how sick America is? A DEA agent leaves a federal agency to join the marijuana industry. He has a name, Patrick Moen. He quit his post in where else? The sickest city in America, Portland, Oregon, to join the second sickest city in the Northeast, in the West, Seattle, to join a private equity firm that specializes in the marijuana industry. Can you believe this? A DEA agent quits the DEA to go to work for pot peddlers. Does it get any better under this administration? Stay tuned. We'll find out. Give me 15 minutes and I'll give you the real America.
join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Michael Savage.
The American people are sitting like a bunch of schmucks watching a dictatorship emerge in front of their eyes.
Weekdays, noon till 3 on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
What I think is that at this point, Washington and Colorado, you've seen the voters speak on this issue. And as it is, you know, the federal government has a lot to do when it comes to criminal prosecutions. It does not make sense from a prioritization point of view for us to focus on recreational drug users in a state that has already said that under state law that's legal.
Since we've no place to go. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Yep, next I guess someone in the government will tell us that occasional use of cocaine is not about the same as a martini. And then I guess the next day the head of the Department of Homeland Security will tell us that radical Islam is the same as Christianity, which they've already done. And perhaps a day after that they'll tell us that amphetamine is, an occasional use won't hurt you. Just use it moderately, use meth moderately. Perhaps that'll come from the vice president on one of his holidays. We don't know what's coming from this administration from day to day. But the point is that when it comes to drugs, they apparently don't know their proverbial elbow from the other part of their body, that they're supposed to know where that is. And the president to say that marijuana is about as the same as alcohol is absurd. It's not the same. But it gets worse than that. I want to focus not on marijuana. I don't want to take marijuana calls because potheads are extremely defensive about their drug. They will defend it in the way that the radical Islamist defends killing for their holy book. And so I'd rather not take any of the callers on that subject, because you can't talk to drug addicts. I don't care whether they're alcoholics, who, by the way, are the most difficult people to treat according to therapists. Drug addiction is very difficult to treat. Alcoholism is even harder to treat according to those I know who actually treat people with these problems. But marijuana addiction is so severe that people will always be in denial. They'll tell you that it's not bad. They can run better than I can, jump better than I can, do this better than I can, whatever. But they don't want to accept the fact that it's a very dangerous entry-level drug that completely throws them off. I certainly don't want kids or adults driving on the roads under marijuana. Do you? Is that your idea of the country you want to live in? Now, having said that, I believe marijuana use should be decriminalized. And I believe that states should sell it and tax it, by the way. I'm on record saying that. Sell it, tax it, control it. Absolutely. No question it should be decriminalized. However, where is this going to stop? Tomorrow we're going to see them selling, let's say, a Colorado stamp for cocaine, methamphetamine, crack cocaine. I mean, where is this going to end? And you may say, well, one is not the same as the other. Well, okay, then let me play for you the soundbite of a DEA agent who has left the Drug Enforcement Administration, and he's a former cop and a former lawyer, to go to work to the marijuana industry in Oregon. Listen to this, clip 8 now.
I spent over 15 years in law enforcement, 10 years with DEA. I worked primarily on targeting large-scale drug trafficking organizations, moving heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, etc. And now at Privateer Holdings, I'm going to be running their compliance program and acting as an in-house attorney.
You hear this? Can you believe a guy would jump ship like this and go from one side to the other and think that no one thinks it's odd? This is unbelievable to me. And so here's a former DEA agent under Barack Obama thinking it's okay to quit the agency and go to work for a pot company as a compliance officer. That means he's going to be able to better argue with the federal government about the use and sale of this drug. Can you believe what's going on in this country? Everything that you feared and worse. But I want to talk instead about the prescription for murder, meaning psychiatric medications. There's two great articles written by Rebecca Terrell in The New American that we're referring to today. I think there's some of the best short articles on it. One is Drugs on the Firing Line. The other is Psychiatric Meds Prescription for Murder by Rebecca Terrell. And if you're looking for natural alternatives to medication, there's only one health book that I have out at this time that's still in print that I know of. I've written about 20 of them. And that's aimed at children. It's called Healing Children Naturally. I think it's still available on my website. I highly recommend that you look into the diets and the herbs, et cetera, that could be used in place of drugs or to avoid drug use entirely. But let's go to the callers now. We're running out of time, and Dr. Breggin will be joining us in the half hour. He's a great psychiatrist who's totally opposed to the use of these mind-bending drugs. Annie on WABC in the heart of snow country, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
What are you calling about?
I'm calling about the prescription drugs that you were talking about. And my mother, at like age 54, she's going through menopause. She was on antidepressant drugs, and she ended up taking her life. When my sister had gotten her to the gynecologist and she got on the hormones for her menopause, she was doing great. But then the psychiatrist said, no, you can't stop those drugs, and you have to keep on them. And then she went downhill after that, and so I was just calling about...
So do you relate the use of the antidepressant to her suicide?
I'm sorry?
Well, I'll say it for you. There's a direct link. There's a causal link in too many cases between antidepressant drugs and suicide and homicide, period. I'm not going to ask the questions. I'll give you the answer. Today, doctors are using SSRIs for obsessive-compulsive disorder, whatever that may be, OCD, bipolar disorder, which whatever that may be. What's bipolar disorder? What is that? Is it to be called manic depression? I know what it is. They used to call it manic depression. Hey, mood swings? Now they have a new, I suffer bipolar disorder. What does that mean? Sometimes you like to act like an AH to people, and sometimes you feel like a wimp? Okay, so now that's a disease. Well, it really isn't a disease, but now they're treating it as such because they can medicate you, and you can declare yourself disabled and collect a nice fat check from Uncle Obama. Bulimia, panic disorder, social anxiety disorder, that's SAD. Social anxiety disorder. In other words, if you were a shy girl or a shy guy and you shun crowds, you're now mentally ill. You're now disabled. Premenstrual dysphoric disorder. That's now an illness that the quacks can put you on a drug. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. That means you don't want to listen to a boring teacher or a boring sermon. And so you fidget or you tap your toe. Now you're sick. And they're putting your kids on Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta as early as age 2 in order to turn them into good little useful drug addicts. And they're using them for dogs and cats. And so we have an epidemic of drug use that's leading to deaths and to suicides. And to homicides, and I want to just talk about it today. And if you have an antidepressant horror story, give us a ring in the Savage Nation, 855-407-2282, and let's hear what you have to say. And we have some great callers on the show right now, as usual. Let's go to San Francisco, KSFO. Kyle, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes, Dr. Savage. I was on Zoloft a couple of years ago, which, as you know, is an SSRI. And the biggest issue that I had with Zoloft was actually getting off it. It didn't help me at all. But getting off Zoloft caused several physical and emotional side effects, the majority of which included massive anxiety attacks after...
One of them probably included speaking on a speakerphone instead of a regular... Can you turn off the speaker on your speaker? I'm sorry, it's better now. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, that was a bad side effect, huh? Okay, so it caused massive side effects such as really bad anxiety. I gained a lot of weight after stopping it as well as when I was on it. And quite honestly, it gave me more reasons to be depressed than before. Horrible, and I'll never go on another SSRI again after that horrible.
Okay, so how do you manage your depression without Zoloft? That's the most interesting question to me.
It's very good that you asked. Interestingly enough, I do vitamin C powder.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Many of us have written about it for over 30 years. Mega doses of vitamin C powder will fight depression. It's well known. Do you know that vitamin C crosses the blood-brain barrier faster than heroin?
That's shocking. Nope.
People don't realize that. The molecule of vitamin C molecule is so small, it can cross the blood-brain barrier faster than heroin can. It's been used in heroin addiction, by the way, and people have said, yes, it worked for me. What does it mean? It means you're having an anxiety attack? Take a flat teaspoonful of vitamin C powder in some, I don't know, bubbly water, whatever you want to use, a soda, whatever, and you'll see immediately, literally within less than a minute, you're going to feel the effect. I know it works. And by the way, then go walk or run around the block right afterwards. You'll get an immediate high.
Right.
All right, Kyle, thanks for listening to the Savage Nation. Former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell and his wife were indicted just now. Former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell and his wife have been indicted on federal corruption charges. Now, what's the first question that comes to your mind? I can read your mind. Was he a Democrat or a Republican? That's all you want to know. Peter Carr, a spokesman for the so-called U.S. Justice Department, says McDonnell and his wife Maureen were indicted. The 14-count indictment includes conspiracy, wire fraud, and other charges. He left the office earlier this month after 4 years in the governor's office. Virginia law limits governors to a single term. Now, what did he do? In July, Governor McDonnell apologized and said he had returned more than $120,000 in loans and other gifts from Johnny Williams, the CEO of pharmaceutical company Star Scientific. And now to answer the question that's on your mind, is he white or is he black? Is he Republican or Democrat? I'm not going to answer that. Instead, I'm going to take calls. It's that simple. WABC John, you're on the Savage Nation. Fire away.
Michael, I just want to comment on the absolutely reckless statement by President Obama in regard to marijuana and alcohol.
Go ahead.
Children, many of their friends smoke pot. They have no clue regards to the psychological and physiological damage. But the main point, Michael, is this is the same Obama who called climate change, that is settled science. So he could say something idiotic like that and then at the same time come out in, a very casual, reckless way to make the comments about
that. Well, he's a reckless man who has very little self-control and very little discipline. It's apparent in how he runs the country in his office. He's into partying, lavish trips, and saying whatever comes to his mind. He doesn't even think about the damage he's doing in his policies or his pronouncements.
And I think you get a true insight into what he's all about when he's not scripted and when he's not reading a teleprompter. And he says,
well, I think that the left loves him for that because he represents them. They're also undisciplined. They don't care what they say. And they don't care about the damage, the devastation that they may leave in their wake, whether it be to their spouses or their children or to their own beings. They don't really care about it. As long as it feels good, do it. John, what field are you in, by the way?
I was formerly a school psychologist. I did that for a number of years, and now I have a consulting business in Manhattan.
Well, John, I'm so glad that you are still talking about the devastation that marijuana produces, both physiological and psychological, in children. It's a darn shame the president didn't do a little reading. That leads us to 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to The Savage Nation. Give me 15 minutes, and I'll give you America.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. The Savage Nation is presented by Swiss America at 800-BUY-COIN, the only gold company Michael Savage trusts.
I'm live with no bumpers. I don't get it, but I'm back on the Savage Nation. The show is new, but I'm not. I'm in the business 19 years. I need a bumper to lead me in, guys. Make sure I get it. Because otherwise I don't know where I am. So it's cold outside, baby. Temperature hit minus 41 at the northern part of Sweden. The harshest winter in a very, very long time. Minus 41 degrees. It's a seasonal record. And more cold records are going to be broken in Sweden during the next 24 hours. We haven't heard from Al Gore. Apparently he's gone to ground and is hiding like a gopher now that the climate change industry seems to be in a decline right now. So here's what people are writing. Global warming sure is cold. 10 years ago, they were speculating about the northern migration of the palm trees. Didn't the BBC go as far as to say that the Arctic region would be completely free of ice and ships could sail through that area? Yes, Al Gore said by 2013, the ice at both poles would be gone. Another one writes, I invested in the Quebec Banana Company on the advice from Al Gore. So there we go, my friends. That's what's going on in the world of temperature. The jihadists in the global warming industry are going to have to reformulate a new phrase because they've gone from global warming to climate change. They're going to have to come up with something else. I don't know what it might be. They'll probably come up with something else that doesn't even have the word climate or change in it in order to make certain they can still rake in the gelt in order to keep doing their research. Let's go back to the big topic, which is depression and antidepressants and the dangers of antidepressants. I have some interesting questions and comments. At the bottom of the hour, Dr. Peter Breggin will answer yours on the Savage Nation. WABC, Cindy, go ahead, please, on the animal issue.
Yes, hi, Michael. I love your intellect, and congratulations on the new time slot. I have 2 points to make, one personal, one professional. I'll get to the professional one first.
Go ahead.
My colleagues, routinely use anti-anxiety medications in animals for various behavior problems, one of which would be aggression. And in our pet formularies, our animal drug formularies that list these human medications, such as amitriptyline, fomipramine,
In dog food they're putting that now?
No, not in dog food. It's prescribed by a veterinarian to an animal.
I've heard about that for years. If the dog is a little snappy or jumpy, they assume that there's something wrong with the dog, not wrong with the environment in which the dog has been put.
Exactly. And I want to say that I agree with you wholeheartedly against the common use of these psychotropic drugs. And I'm against it, for the most part, in animals also.
Cindy, absolutely. You know that I see humans feeding dogs sugary candies or croissants, and they don't know that it has the same effect on the dog's brain as it does on children. I see stupid mothers who look like movie stars giving their child coffee and croissants in the morning thinking that they're Parisians and then sending them off to school with a little backpack and Zoloft in their brain. It's amazing to me how ignorant this generation of mothers have become, and they are the ones that we have to reach. When I come back in the Savage Nation, Dr. Peter Breggin, to take your questions and calls right here on the one and only Savage Nation, doing something no one else dares do. Talk about health, not health care.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
We are talking about depression and antidepressant. We're talking about pasta and antipasto. We are talking about how to deal with depression, and we're talking mostly about the dangers of prescription antidepressants. Why? Because in the news this morning was a heartbreaking story about a young girl, 19 years old, track star, goes to college, pushes herself too hard, gets anxious, gets depressed, goes home, the father sends her to a psychiatrist, puts her on medication, and she jumps off a building. Suicide. Nothing to laugh at. It's heartbreaking, the loss of a life. Why would a girl jump off a building after taking an antidepressant? We've talked about SSRIs. Let's go to Dr. Peter Breggin, who's been at this a lot longer than I have. Dr. Breggin, welcome back after so many years to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, glad to be with you again.
Remember years ago, we're talking over 10 years ago, aren't we?
Yeah, I would say roughly 10 years ago, and I've been talking about antidepressants causing violence and suicide since the second year after Prozac came out, about 1990, 91.
So right. But you've gotten wide play since those years on my show, haven't you? Aren't you being listened to by Fox News and whatnot now?
Yes, more and more. And not only that, a lot of what I've been saying have been incorporated into the FDA labels for the drugs. So people are getting more and more alert. I'm just reading the textbook of psychiatry for a legal case I'm doing on a suicide from an antidepressant. And now the psychiatric textbook from the American Psychiatric Association says that physicians should warn about suicide in association with starting, particularly starting the antidepressant drugs in adults, not just in children, but in adults. So,
Dr. Breggin, when you first came on the Savage Nation years ago, we were most focused on the psychiatric pharmaceutical establishment pushing these drugs on children as young as 2 years of age. It's gotten worse in some ways, hasn't it?
Yes, it continues to grow worse and worse. The drug companies will market in any way they can. They will cover up adverse drug effects in any way they can. And I know this is a medical expert who goes into their records and looks at how they behave. And then in my field of psychiatry, psychiatrists are pretty unscrupulous about just going ahead with the latest drug and pushing it. And very, very few of us are willing to take a stand against the drugging of our children or the general drugging of people. It's a bad thing, Michael.
But you're a psychiatrist. You're not just an outsider looking in who's complaining about it. We're talking about a medical establishment that today treats ailments such as OCD, bipolar, bulimia, so-called social anxiety disorder, PMS, attention deficit disorder, with Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta, and the effects are quite hazardous, suicide, homicide. And what I'm trying to do is alert America to this all over again. I'm not the only one doing it, Dr. Breggin. So you say you're making headway, which is good, that the establishment is starting to incorporate such dangers on the labels. But what worries me the most is that for a kid to be declared to be disabled, the mother has to simply go to a shrink who says that the child has any of these illnesses, put them on one of these drugs, and suddenly their payments on SSI go way up. So there's a medical, welfare relationship here in a way, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a huge incentive for parents to put their kids on drugs, and I think that happens to a greater extent in the poor community. There have even been clinics in the inner cities that have catered to that concept. We'll put your son on or daughters on drugs and you can get increased aid from the government. But I think most parents are misled. Most parents simply don't realize that by putting their child on one of these stimulant drugs, they're giving the child something that's chemically almost identical to methamphetamine and cocaine, and that it's going to increase the potential for drug addiction when the kids grow up. We've been starting to track what happens to these people over the decades in the literature, and it's increasingly obvious that when you start a kid on drugs, you're inviting later incarceration in prisons, in hospitals, drug addiction. They're not good for the person. They're not good for the brain. And more evidence, too, Michael, that they actually cause shrinkage of the brain. That's gross damage to the brain over years of exposure.
Dr. Breggin, what amazes me is that the Senate, which should know better, instead of attacking the overprescription of these drugs and the imposition on these drugs on our children, instead had the nerve to attack caffeine. Some of the most liberal Democrat senators are on a warpath against caffeine in coffee, in sodas, and in other beverages, completely ignoring the damages and dangers of these powerful chemicals on our children. And I suspect it's because they may be in the pocket of the drug industry. Would I be wrong in making that assumption?
Well, first, you're absolutely right. I mean, the risks of caffeine are minuscule. They're there, but they're minuscule compared to the drugs we're giving our kids, which are, amphetamine-type drugs. So the risks are enormous.
Then why do senators like Blumenthal and others have a vendetta against soda, and they don't talk about Adderall in children 3 years old? There's only one explanation, and it's very ugly. And that's where the leadership is lacking, Dr. Breggin. Yeah, I'm saying it, you're saying it, others are saying it. But when you see a Democrat liberal leadership attacking a natural substance such as caffeine and looking the other way when you have such unnatural chemicals being forced on our children, you have to ask which side the government is on.
Well, there's no question which side the government is on. The government has been promoting the drugging of children for decades now. The guys who work in the government, they want to, when they retire, they want to double dip and work for the drug companies. And the drug company psychiatric lobby, you're talking about the senators and how they'd be influenced, that lobby is just about the biggest. It's either number one or number two in Washington in terms of the money that they put in.
Can we find out if any of the American Pharmaceutical Association money has gone to Senator Dick Durbin, for example?
I would think you could research that. I'm not exactly sure how. That's very, very much on that political research, and I'll bet you could do that. I could try looking into it.
Well, because they're adamant. They're after caffeine, and they're saying nothing about Adderall.
Yep.
Dr. Breggin, let's get back to the subject at hand. Could you explain to the audience on the Savage Nation what SSRIs do and why people go into such severe depressions taking them and then might jump off a building? What actually happens? Is it that the body has a finite amount of serotonin, and then when the body can no longer pump it, so to speak, they fall into a black hole? Is that a simplistic analysis, or is that what happens?
It's not a bad metaphor. You know, the theory behind these drugs was you had to pump up serotonin in the brain, and that would help with violence and suicide. It's a cockamamie theory. But what actually happens is the brain hates being disrupted. So when you take Celexa or Prozac or Paxil and it tries to pump up your serotonin in the brain, brain says no. It shuts down the production of serotonin. It blocks all the effects it can of the drug. It even destroys its own receptors for serotonin in its effort to try not to be overstimulated.
You know, John, what's interesting, people don't understand it. These cynics say, it's a bunch of nonsense. They want to believe it, good for them. But, you know, there is a power in the word God itself. There is a power in trying to say, I don't know what to do, but wait a minute, maybe God can help me. And literally saying, God, please help me. Sometimes that alone helps you. Recognizing that you're not really alone here.
Said in the past, is there's justifiable anger, and you discussed that in the past.
Yes, thank you very much. I know a lot of intelligent people who are angry every day because of what the country is doing to this country, what the administration is doing to this country. They're infuriated on a daily basis.
But I remember you discussing about how Jesus entered into the temple and removed the tax collectors, and you said that was justifiable anger.
All right. And today they probably, the state would have arrested him and put him on Zoloft.
Instead, they put him on a tree.
Well, you know, it's funny, though. I can hear by your laugh that you're a very healthy person, by the way.
A lot of it has to
I'm diagnosing you on the air. I'm diagnosing you on the air. You know, laughter is a healing agent, that we all know, but not everyone knows how to laugh, Steve. Some people can't laugh. They don't even have the capacity for a laugh. You do, John.
Or they've been driven down so much that they don't have that capacity anymore, and I'm afraid a lot that's happening to a lot of people in this country today.
Well, I'm glad that you found your way out of it without drugs. That's an amazing story, and I thank you for telling me I have something to do with it, by the way. So we all struggle every day. Don't you understand that there's not a person listening to this? Let me back up for a minute. I would think that at this point in the show, which is 2 hours later, the people who are listening the longest now will be those who are very depressed or who have dealt with depression in their lives with others. And they're hanging on the show hoping that they'll learn something for themselves. And maybe they have, maybe they haven't. But what I want to say is, when you look outside yourself in the street or wherever you are, you have the assumption that the other people are happier than you or that everyone somehow is able to cope without drugs, but you can't. They can, you can't. They're different than you. They don't have the ups and downs that you have. Well, nothing can be farther from the truth. It's the human condition, my friend. It's been written about and talked about since the age of the Bible, if not before. Man is a spiritual animal. Man has ups and downs all day long. And I've tried to tell you, and I'll do it in a simple way so that maybe you'll remember it. I live next to the water for a number of reasons. I'm an extremely moody person. When I look at the water and I watch the tides, there are four tides a day, two highs and two lows. The tide goes up twice, it comes down twice. What does that say to me? It says to me we go up and down a few times a day. Don't look to become a flatliner. Where is it written that a human being is supposed to walk around with a smile fixed on their face and feel good all day long? Hey, if you can, God bless you. Maybe you have something that I don't. But most of us have moods. And you go up and you go down. Then you go up and then you go down and then you go to sleep. That's simple. That's the cycle of life. You know, animals react to their surroundings. Man reacts to his surroundings. We react to sounds. We react to sights. We react to smells. I, for one, can't be around perfume of any kind. This has gone on since I'm a kid. I get sick from it. It goes back to the first grade. The teacher wore the cheapest toilet water, that's what they call it then, that you could remember. I get a migraine headache every time I went into Mrs. J's class. She doused herself with it. So to this day, whatever that was the reason, who knows what I associated with, remembrances of things past, not everything is a petite Madeleine. I mean, some things are the opposite of wonderful smells. I don't like the smell of perfume. I can't have anyone in my home who has cologne on, would you believe it? It offends people. They think I'm a nut. If a man comes in the house with cologne, I get as sick as a woman coming in with bad perfume. So go figure out, what does that leave me? A recluse with a dog. He doesn't use perfume. He smells just fine. It's that simple. That's why I love animals. So when I take Teddy on a walk after he gets a bath twice a week, I put a coat on him. So when he rubs against the bush, which he's in love with, I wash the coat instead of having to wash him 5 days a week. Teddy has some kind of OCD. If I take Teddy for a walk, he's unusual. It's not just he smells a bush and lifts his leg. Okay, I could live with that. I had dogs who did that. No, this one has to rub himself against the bush. The face goes into the hedge. The body goes into the hedge. He presses against the hedge, and I have to say, Teddy, please, we know each other 10 years. Stop it already. Grow up. Stop rubbing against the bush. Just lift your leg and do it. And he looks at me with those knowing eyes and says, I can't help it, Dad. I'm just a dog. I'm just a little a little dog. So he and I have a special relationship, I can assure you. And I'm certainly not thinking of putting him on antidepressants. But, you know, the other day when I told you on Sunday I went to a bar, which I rarely ever do, because a friend of mine called, come the guys in there, blah, 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 to watch the sports. I walked in the crowded bar with him in my arms. He was shaking from the noise. He got, the brainwaves got affected. And the whole ride home, he was laying low. His head, you know, the head in between the two paws, looking there, like hunkering down in the right seat of Wilhelm. He didn't want to move. He was shaken by the noise and the crowd and the lights and the screaming and the this and the alcohol. And it was only when the car, 5 miles away, turned the corner of the road that leads to my house, that he jumped up, he felt the motion of the car, going home, felt safe, came in, stretched, shook, and looked at me. So we are definitely affected by our surroundings. Well, time is running short here on the Savage Nation, and I have to take another quick break, after which time I'll be right back to bring you more information and bring you America right here on the Savage Nation. Be here or be absolutely nowheresville.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
So we're going back again to drugs on the firing line because doctors are prescribing these medicines for far more than depression. They're prescribing them for OCD, bipolar disorder, bulimia, panic disorder, social anxiety disorder, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. They're using Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta, being prescribed to treat ADHD. These are dangerous because the side effects may include suicide and homicide, homicidal ideation. I woke up this morning and I saw a very sad story about a track star, age 19, at University of Pennsylvania, who jumped off a building. The girl was beautiful. She was talented. She was physically fit. Track star from New Jersey. Jumps from a Philly parking garage. Because of the stress of her grades at her Ivy League school, her father told the New York Post. She went to college. She was happy. Then there's more pressure on her than ever before, right? And so she gets under a lot of pressure trying to, you know, get straight A's. So she shares her suicidal thoughts with her parents, and guess what happens? They send her to a drug pusher called a therapist. The drug pusher therapist puts her on antidepressants, and guess what happens next? She jumps off a building. I am going to tell you right now that prescription drugs are about as dangerous as they come. Antidepressants, psychiatric meds, as the New American said years ago, is a prescription for murder. I've been writing about the dangers of these drugs in books since 1982 when I wrote Healing Children Naturally. I've been warning you against putting your children on these hazardous drugs. I'm warning you about the medical profession, Zoloft, Adderall, Pramate, Elavil. They're killing your children. If your child is particularly intelligent, he or she is at greater risk than the average child because they're taking the brightest amongst our children and doping them up to make them conform, and they're letting the dumbest amongst our children lead the classes. There's an element to it that needs to be discussed, and that is, why are the prescriptions for these drugs on a rise? Answer, because of the racket called disability. Because disability in children puts the income from SSI up through the roof. As a result, a bunch of corrupt parents in the hundreds of thousands say that their child has mental problems, can't pay attention, can't do this, go to the shrink. Shrink says, yeah, mentally ill, put him on the drug. The child then gets a check for the fat mommy so she can go and gamble away at an Indian gambling casino, I would imagine. And meanwhile, you have a roving murderer there sitting there with drugs in his system that can go off at any moment. Did you know that children who are declared to be disabled get a certain amount of money from Social Security that's more than your grandfather who fought in the Korean War does? Mental illness is now the leading cause of disability in children, well ahead of physical disabilities such as cerebral palsy or Down syndrome, for which these federal programs were created. And as a result of this, the pharmaceutical establishment, in cahoots with the shrinks, are saying with almost a rubber stamp, yeah, your child's disabled, put him on this, put him on that, and we're having these heroic suicides and heroic homicides as a result. That's one of the main topics that I want to talk about today on the Savage Nation. In order to engage you in this topic and bring you into the discussion, I would like to invite you to call with your antidepressant horror stories. Have you or someone in your family or close circle been affected negatively by antidepressants? You see, they're not all they're cracked up to be. Let me explain to you in a nutshell what most of the antidepressants are. The most popular type, the Prozac type, is called an SSRI, a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. What does that mean? It means serotonin makes us feel good. It's a mood-stabilizing chemical that our body naturally produces as a result of a certain right amount of sleep, the right foods, the right exercise. We'll have a certain amount of serotonin in our serum at any time. Well, the thought was is that if that's a mood stabilizer, more of it would be better. And so the shrinks worked in cahoots with the drug establishment to find a way to keep as much of the serotonin circulating in our serum at all times as possible. It made sense. I mean, it wasn't they set out to hurt anybody. Figured people are depressed. What's the best way to keep them their mood elevated, make sure that the serotonin levels are kept up. So we'll develop a drug that constantly prevents the body from depleting serotonin. Well, guess what? There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
400-7282. I want to backtrack a bit, and I want to show you the comparison between football and politics, because maybe then I could capture some of the people who don't even know what I'm talking about. I'm not a sports fan. I haven't been a sports fan since I'm a young kid. I know that there are intelligent people who are sports fans. Some of them are in my own family, and they're much smarter than I am. I had the honor of being invited to watch the 49ers versus the Seattle game, whatever they're called, the Seahawks, I guess. I wasn't feeling well, and I was working on two books over the weekend. I'm working on a new novel in the Jack Hatfield series, and I was also working on the sequel to Trickle Down Tyranny, which will be my last nonfiction book of its type. I'm not doing any others. It's too hard. It's the last chance I'm going to have anyway. And it's murder. But the book is How to Stop the Coming Civil War. I've told you about it. It's going to be a big book. It's my last chance to change anything. It's going to come out just before the elections, the midterms. So my eyes were just blurry. I got a call from a friend, a new friend of mine, and I don't want to make believe I'm them, because I'm not them, and I don't want to abuse them. I'm not going to mention their names. He's a former Navy SEAL, a wonderful man, and he invited me to a bar in a rural area of the Bay Area to watch the game. He said, I know you're not a sports fan, but there's a Navy SEAL, that a friend of mine, and a few other guys I want you to meet. He said, you probably won't want to come. Well, I said, I'll be there with Teddy. Long and short of it is, I didn't feel well. I went out for a half an hour to come back and continue working, and then I laid in bed the rest of the night because I didn't feel good. But I went into the bar, and it was just jammed with sports fans. And, you know, the noise got to me right away because I'm a recluse. I live like a monk in a monastery. Any sound affects me very, very deeply. I just don't like my laboratory being disturbed, so to speak. And I've unfortunately gotten to the point where I can't take crowds of any kind, even in a bar. The minute I walked into the bar, my friend led me into the corner where him and his friends were hanging around in the bar. I felt as though I was in a movie set. I mean, if I were doing central casting for a movie, it would have been this group. And we enjoyed the game for a little bit. We talked about Teddy. We talked about some other things. And then I excused myself and left and came back and, frankly, continued on the books till my eyes didn't work. And then, as I said, I just stayed in bed the rest of the night. But as I was watching the 49ers game, something impressed me that's really basic and simple and obvious. Perhaps it's obvious to you as well. The team that's more aggressive usually wins. The team that doesn't give the other side a moment to regroup and to capture its bearings usually wins. This is true whether it's on a battlefield or a sports field or a political field. Right now, the opposition, the communist socialist cabal, under Barack Obama, or whoever's running him is probably others. He is their quarterback. He was their quarterback, but they're not too happy. They're probably going to pull him out of the game soon and put in a new quarterback, which is why he's giving so many apologetic speeches and why he's suddenly reverting back to the thin race stuff that got him where he was way back at Columbia, you know, appealing to the lowest instincts in mankind. I believe that he as a quarterback is starting to fail, and they're going to have to pull him off the field very soon and put someone else in his place. But having said that, I thought about it. We have no opposition team. There is no opposition team. There's no Republican Party. There's no press. There's only the people. And we are the majority. Make no mistake about it. We are still the majority. We outnumber those in the government. We outnumber those in the NSA. We outnumber those in the cabal. We outnumber those in the Democrat Party, and yet we are powerless because we are voiceless. It's not as though we are the silent majority. We are the silenced majority. Because the minute any one of us speak up, we're called every name under the sun, which is why President Obama is acting so, oh, so presidential by saying his ratings are falling because of racism, not because his policies themselves have been put onto the ash heap of history because they have failed and because everyone can see through him. They see that his game is just about corruption, and his game is about using liberalism and fairness as a cover for outright robbing the treasury. Not by him, of course. He's not personally gaining from any of this. It's the people who put him where he is, the cronies, and which brings us right back to the outsourcing story I told you about. The fact that Obamacare, which was a giant failure, the website, cost $800 million, created by a friend of the First Lady, allegedly. Well, now they're redoing the website for a $90 million contract. The lead contractor is a company called Accenture, and they're using offshore workers, shall I say, foreign workers, tech workers, on H-1B visas because they work for 25% less than the prevailing wage for a similar U.S. citizen worker. That is why Mark Zuckerface, Mr. Undershirt, is marching like the idealist for immigration reform. It's not for immigration reform. It's for H-1B visas, in my opinion. That's all it's about. He wants H-1B visas by the thousands so he can make even more billions. You idiots, you. And you think it's about immigration reform? It's about the bottom line, the bottom line, the bottom line. So when you see that liberalism is nothing but a masquerade for cronyism or vulture capitalism, you'll come to understand why so many Americans like myself are disgusted by the big lie. And let me say something else. If Barack Obama were just an honest liberal and lived a quiet life and didn't abuse the taxpayer and didn't abuse his position of power and didn't abuse the treasury with his many trips and his royal lifestyle, I think many of us could have lived with him. But he's not any of those things. He's a demagogue in that regard. A demagogue is a very dangerous individual to have in the White House. And that's why many of us are outraged. I want to remind you that when I was a young social worker in New York City, and a young liberal at that, because if you're not a liberal at 20, you have no heart, and if you're still a liberal at 40, you have no mind, as we all know. I was a liberal at 20, because I didn't know any better, and I believed a lot of the rubbish that was being dished out to us. That's what they do, is they capitalize on the youth, which is how Obama has hooked the youth into buying into Obamacare. Now they find out that they bought a bill of goods that they have to pay for. And they thought there was such a thing as a free lunch or, let's say, a free Band-Aid. No, no, you're paying for the Band-Aids of others, like illegal aliens, your grandmother, etc. But you're actually going to pay much more than your grandmother and illegal aliens who are paying nothing. Why do you think the poor are signing up for Obamacare? Wouldn't you? If you could get something for nothing, if you can get insurance when no one wants to give it to you because they'll go broke if they do, wouldn't you be glad if the young pot-smoking moron would pay for it? Sure. You're paying for the spying as well. You're paying for all of it because you're the young and the impressionable. Just this weekend, Obama bellyached that it was racism that has driven his poll numbers down, which is astonishing, by the way. Actually, it's astonishing to believe he would revert to this. I mean, I don't know how to put it to you other than it's astonishing. There's nothing else I can say about it. It's just astonishing. Obama says racial animus blunts his approval, New Yorker reports. Racial tensions have softened his popularity among white voters within the last 2 years. Now, on the face of it, it's illogical and makes no sense. That's why it's illogical. I don't think they teach logic and scientific method in schools anymore. I think they just teach groupthink. So the whites who elected him in 08 and 2012 are suddenly racist? The whites who just discovered that he's biracial have turned on him? They were colorblind in 08 and 2012, but now they're just blind altogether? Secondly, when he says, quote, there's no doubt that there's some folks who just really dislike me because they don't like the idea of a black president, it's actually insulting to his mother's memory. His mother was a white woman. What do you mean he's a biracial man? He should own that. He should speak for the millions of biracial people in America. Why is he reverting to the omission of one side of his heritage? Why? Because it worked for him. It's worked for this president from the time he was out of Punahou High School. He found out how to get ahead. He found out that you can use white guilt to rise to the top. And, of course, he stopped it for a long while because he realized it wasn't presidential and didn't look very good to race bait. But now that his policies have been seen for what they are, and the cronyism and vulture capitalists around him who have never done better are doing better than ever, America is still a land of opportunity and a land of opportunists. Think about that one. America is still a land of opportunity and a land of opportunists. I'll let you decide who's running the country. I now want to go back for a moment to radio per se, because I have begun in a new slot. It's only been 20 days now, 19 or 20 days of the month. I've only been on the air 2 or 3 weeks in this daytime slot after 20 years in radio. So I want to read you some of the things people are saying thus far about Michael Savage and about the others. I like Savage because he's a conservative and puts Democrats and Republicans on the carpet, someone wrote. He is not a party hack. Plus, as an old reform lib, he knows how to get in their face and dish back to them what they dish out. Republicans just don't know how to fight. Savage does. I also love that Savage has more than just politics to discuss, which makes his show more entertaining and seldom boring. I love Savage in the new slot. I think that H is a nice guy, and I like him on TV with guests, but his radio show is so dull and a broken record. And when the GOP is in power, Wallbanger becomes a Republican hack, as he was during the Bush years. He only becomes a conservative when Dems have the White House. I can only listen to the Wallbanger when he has guests on, as he does on his TV show. Funny how when I see him on TV with guests, his voice does not bother me. But on the radio, Wallbanger's voice is irritating. Next comment is this. The three best conservative talk radio hosts by far are the three that we know. But I have to give Savage credit for writing off the Republicans years before Limbaugh and others realize the GOP is a wolf in sheep's clothing. He doesn't mention others. And Savage at 3 p.m. Eastern has caught fire. It will be the biggest thing in radio. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The list includes 15-year-old Kip Kinkle withdrawing from Prozac when he shot 22 classmates, killing two, after murdering his mother and stepfather at his home in Springfield, Oregon. 14-year-old Elizabeth Bush on Prozac when she blasted away at fellow students in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, wounding one. 18-year-old Jason Hoffman on Effexor and Celexa, and he opened fire at his California high school, wounding five. 15-year-old Sean Cooper on a mix of antidepressants when he shot students in Idaho. 15-year-old TJ Solomon, also on a mix of antidepressants when he aimed his shotgun at classmates in Conyers, Georgia, wounding six. And 17-year-old Eric Harris on Luvox when he and partner Dylan Klebold killed 12 classmates and a teacher in the bloodiest school massacre yet, Columbine.
That was then, this is now, and it's gotten worse, and drugs are involved in every school shooting that I've been able to investigate. And I don't think that enough of us in the media are doing our jobs with regard to warning America about these prescriptions for murder that are being put out by the drug peddlers with psychiatric credentials. The fact of the matter is they can be very helpful in some cases and extremely dangerous in others, but they don't come with sufficient warning labels. So it's not about the guns, it's about the drugs, and it's time we talked about the dangers of prescription antidepressants. Now, is it a conspiracy? No. What it is pure greed. It's all about money. What they've done here is found a method of permitting parents who are lazy to put their children on disability payments. That's right. You heard me. You don't understand what's going on here, but I do. The president has opened up the Pandora's box by saying marijuana is no more dangerous than alcohol. What he's done is set common sense on its head. Obviously, he never took science on his road to his law degree, and he doesn't know the difference between a water-soluble drug such as alcohol and a fat-soluble drug such as marijuana, which stays in your system for days, if not weeks at a time. But that's not the issue. I expect Obama knows about as much about the difference between water-soluble and fat-soluble as he does about health care. But the point is that when it comes to drugs, they apparently don't know their proverbial elbow from the other part of their body, that they're supposed to know where that is. And the president to say that marijuana is about as the same as alcohol is absurd. It's not the same. The issue, though, is not about Obama. The issue is about what message it sends to our vulnerable children, the most vulnerable members of our society. When a man in such a position of power tells them it's okay to smoke marijuana, wink, wink. We all know it isn't. In fact, experts will tell you today how dangerous it is. But I'm not going to talk about marijuana per se. That's only part and parcel of the meltdown of our society under this liberal juggernaut that is ruling the world. Again, the phone number is 855-400-7282. Here we go into the end of hour number three today, Tuesday, January 21st, 2014. MichaelSavage.com, home of The Savage Nation, Borders, Language, and Culture. Give me 15 minutes and I'll give you America. You know what my headlines are today on MichaelSavage.com? Here they are. Russian police gun down Islamic jihadist leader ahead of Sochi Olympic Games. The religion of peace strikes again. John Kerry is joining Mexican officials to protest Texas's plan to execute an illegal alien cop killer. Thanks, John. At least we know which country you represent as Secretary of State. Why don't you just move there? Young girl threw herself out of a window. Beautiful girl, 19-year-old track star, under pressure at U of P, goes to a psychiatrist, puts her on antidepressants. Next thing, she throws herself off a building. We're talking about the dangers of antidepressants. When will you wake up? Also on MichaelSavage.com, more black babies aborted than born alive in New York. Okay, so Planned Parenthood is not racist. Also, those of you who are interested in these things, you know about credit card theft and credit card theft rings? Well, two Mexicans were caught at the border after ripping off a major American store chain. Ah, they all come here to work. Meanwhile, the open administration of Barack and the First Lady have imposed a secrecy curtain on the First Lady's lavish celebrity-filled birthday party. You're not allowed to see what she actually does. You're just allowed to read the puff piece about the First Lady Moocher Shell. Did you believe this? White House imposes secrecy rules on First Lady's lavish, celebrity-filled birthday party. Right? What else is there? Well, we wouldn't know. It was a party in the East Room Saturday night, attended by 500 people. And, of course, you're not allowed to know who was there. Because if you would know who was there, you're liable to put two and two together. And once you put two and two together, you're liable to come up with C-O-M-M-I-E. The crackdown, by the way, appears to have been a success. Nobody has said one word. They were all sworn to Omerta by the gang that can shoot quite straight indeed. Yeah. Let's see what else is on MichaelSavage.com. Let's go to the bottom of the page and see what's down there. Well, it's all old stuff today. So what I'm going to have you do is go to the bottom left and sign up for the Savage Nation's free daily newsletter. You just click there and it arrives in your inbox a couple of times a week. Also, if you like the Savage Nation and you're a new listener, can I suggest you go to a bookstore and pick up my new paperback, my autobiography called Train Tracks, full of pictures of me as a weightlifting boy, wearing dead man's pants, etc. Train Tracks. Oh my God, speaking of trains, here comes the train. Gotta go. Bye.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.